Lanaya Roberts is a professional artist. Through her online-based social art practice, Lanaya is empowering millions of people worldwide to embody radical self-compassion, love, and acceptance. With nearly 300,000 Instagram followers, Lanaya is certainly making her mark in the world. I sat down with Lanaya in her Louisville-based art studio on a sunny but crisp Saturday afternoon. Over some tea, of course. Cue music. Let's go.
Should we do a little tea ASMR?
Let's do a little. That's right, because we're hey.
A little tea.
What kind of tea is this?
This is a chai rhubarb or something. No, it's a South African tea. So it's a chai South African tea mix. So here's a little.
Take two. It's good.
There you go.
Well, it's interesting because I have a therapist and. So I've grown a lot and learned, because it's been 7 years. And I told him, because oftentimes which is not true, but we sometimes think that even that which we tell ourselves isn't necessarily powerful. Mm-hmm. But that's almost never the case.
Yeah.
And so I told him, I was like, because I'm thinking I'm joking with myself. For a period, I would wake up, go in the mirror, and say, oh, gosh, when are you going to... And I told him that. He's like, stop that. Yeah. I said, but I don't really necessarily, you know what it is? Because because I didn't grow up bigger or anything. Mm-hmm. So for me, in my mind, it's still temporary. And I think I convinced myself that even while I experience what I experience temporarily, it's okay to talk to myself that way.
Yeah.
But it's not. Because it's still me.
Yeah.
And it's so in other words, the thinner me, the happier me, whatever, not happier, but the more athletic me, because I run a marathon or whatever, he deserves the praise, but this part of me doesn't. And that's what my therapist was trying to, I was like, oh, I never thought about that. That's deep.
Yeah.
That's deep.
When I was a teenager, I lost 50 pounds.
Okay.
And I lost 50 pounds because I had a goal to love myself. And when I made the New Year's resolution to start loving myself, I was 15 years old. I realized I didn't love myself. Mm-hmm. Because I realized that every time I looked in the mirror, I always had really terrible. I would make myself cry, looking at myself in the mirror and just being so upset with the fact that I was not beautiful. I wasn't deemed beautiful by my peers. I wasn't seen as beautiful by society. I hated the fact that I wasn't beautiful and I couldn't do anything about it other than lose weight. And when I decided to love myself and create the New Year's resolution, it was just like, okay, I have a New Year's resolution to love myself. Well, that means I need to lose weight, because there's no way I can love myself right here. Mm-hmm. There's no way I can love myself as a fat person.
And where did that start? Like, can you tell us a little bit about your origins as a human being, as Lanaya Roberts?
Sure.
We're in Louisville right now. Mm-hmm. I forget where our video. We're in Louisville. You're from here?
Born and raised in the West End. Born and raised until I was like 10-12 years old in the West End. And then I moved out to other parts in the city. Butchel. But anyways, I'm just like, oh, no one will know this unless they're in Louisville. Why am I saying it out loud?
Right.
But anyway, because we're in Louisville right now, so I'm like in the mindset of like, I'm in Louisville, I'm from the West End. Anyways, born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky. And my mom's, a thin, she's been thin my entire life. Homecoming queen multiple times, like every year of her high school years.
Okay.
Very beautiful woman. My dad is like, just plus size, big guy,
right.
Not necessarily who you would consider like very handsome, good looking person or whatever. That's no shade to my dad. Like, my dad's very handsome. Yes. But, you know, I say that to say that I grew up in a family seeing a woman love that deserved it because she's beautiful, you know, just like one, two and two together.
Okay.
Beautiful woman.
Right.
Deserves love.
Right.
Woman deserves love. Beautiful woman. My mom, it made a difference and this will hurt her feelings if she heard this, you know, but I don't mean it this way. It's just the way society works. I didn't grow up seeing a plus size woman being loved. And I didn't really see a plus size woman being loved anywhere, right?
Okay.
I mean, I can name you maybe two movies
mm-hmm.
that I saw growing up
mm-hmm.
of a plus size woman being loved properly. And that wasn't until my teenage years when I saw Queen Latifah in, you're right, right? And try to think of anybody else, right? Lizzo was Lizzo when I was in my 20s. Right. So I grew up a couple decades.
I thought you were still in your 20s. I'm sorry.
I am still in my 20s. Oh, okay. So Lizzo only became Lizzo a couple years ago. I mean, like, Lizzo's been, you know, I mean, no, her real name ain't Lizzo. Anyways, I say that to say that I didn't grow up with very much representation around, you know, plus size black woman loving herself. There was Queen Latifah, there was Monique. And when I went to school, people would use their names as a way to tease me. Oh, you look like Monique. Oh, you look like Queen Latifah. You, as in, they're not beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
now, do you have siblings?
I do. So okay. I grew up here. I have a brother, a little brother, and a little sister. I'm the oldest. And yeah, like, I grew up very unconfident. I've always been plus size. My dad taught me the love of food. Okay. And I love him for it, you know, but he trapped me. When I was in elementary school, I remember feeling very invisible and also very targeted because I was like this teddy bear in a sense. People could say things to me and I wouldn't really know how to take up for myself because I've always been a very sensitive girl, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, I would always feel invisible until the art projects came out. And at that point, I would become the star of the classroom. Because I was always the best, you know. I'm an artist. I'm a visual artist, professional visual artist to this day, and that was something that was really impactful for me in my life. I felt very seen when I was in the space of creating, because it was something I was excellent in, and it's unfortunate that I only felt seen whenever I was being excellent, because something that is really painful as in being in a body that people look through, right? And don't really pay attention to. I don't know if you've noticed, you know, maybe you have a different experience being in a plus size body, particularly differentiating it from your experience in your, you know, thinner body.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're plus size in the society, people are meaner to you. Like, they aren't necessarily as kind. You know, there are women that lose weight and they talk about it all the time on Instagram or TikTok, where it's just like, people open doors for me now. People help me with my carry my groceries to my car now. People do these things. You mean to tell me this is a normal thing for normal, quote unquote, size people? Y'all just been treated nice throughout y'all's lives?
I've had a very, very different experience. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, because I've only recently, like in the last 10, 15 years.
And you're a man too.
And I'm a man. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. actually what I was getting at. I was just having this conversation with someone. For the most part, we don't get told that. There's just almost no different treatment unless you get in the way of someone's comfort, say on a plane, for example. Or we might hear, hey, like, I was in New York recently and I was walking down a street and a guy was coming behind me. He was just walking fast, New York, and he wanted to get by. He was like, hey, big guy coming through. That's it. That's the most no one's ever called me overweight. Well, overweight, but not like in a in a mean way. Yeah, you know, it's just not. I think you have to get really, really, really big and make other people uncomfortable before they actually say something to you. As a man, it's just it's really different.
And
it's
and really different. You know, the things that I'm talking about just now, they're very subtle things. Yeah. You know, like opening a door, helping with the groceries. Like those are subtle That's treatments that you can go past life. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. You know, if you do get it, it's just like, oh, that's a plus.
Yeah.
The things are subtle, and I picked up on it from a very young age that, you know, I wasn't beautiful. That girl, you know, was prettier than me, and she gets attention without having to do anything.
But did any of that come from home? Because so far, I haven't heard anything about you getting that in your home environment as a child.
Like in terms of
negativity. That because negativity. Did any of that come from that space?
No, not really. I come from a very loving family. A lot of my, you know, trauma centers around what happened outside of the home.
Wow.
Which is fortunate for me. Now, I'm not saying I don't have any trauma, but I really am grateful, and I see my experience growing up as something that, you know, my parents, they're still together to this day, and they actively try to pursue love in their daily lives. They actively try, and I'm not talking about together, I'm talking about in general. They are practicers of love. And so I've been taught love since I was a child, you know, what that looks like. And that's something in my personal life that I've noticed with people, you know, we get close and they're just like, Lanaya, like, I've never been loved by anyone like this before. Mm-hmm. You're teaching me how to love, you know, you're teaching me how to be loved, you know? And I think that that's such a privilege and something that I was blessed with by my parents. They taught me how to be a good person. You know, I'm raised by good people. And you know, we, you know, my mom's a custodian. She worked as a daycare, you know, she worked in daycares when I was younger. She's now a custodian. My dad's been a barber all my life. He's now a custodian. He's just recently retired from being a barber. So I grew up, you know, my parents, you know, working parents, you know, we didn't come from a lot, but we had a lot of love. That's what was told a lot. And, you know, as I was growing up, we don't have a lot, but we have a lot of love.
We had a lot of love. You know, it's interesting because my pastor out of New York has 7 sons.
Mm.
And only 7 sons. And, you know, as you can imagine, raising black men, black boys and then who become black men, can be a thing in any environment in the United States in particular. And one of the things he talked about was creating such a strong home culture so that he and his wife, they could counter whatever culture existed in the world. Mm-hmm. It was almost like a counterculture. It's like, well, you're not going to join a gang because your gang is here. You're not going to, you know, not do well at school because your brothers and your, you know, your parents are going to encourage you to do well.
Wow.
So I wonder, do you feel that you experience a strong enough counterculture to counter or balance whatever you experience outside of the home with regard to, you know, like weight and your feelings of not being beautiful?
No, I didn't. And the reason why is because my parents weren't equipped to know how to do that. My dad grew up with all brothers. My mom grew up with one brother, and she never dealt with the feelings of being ugly throughout her life, or not beautiful, or having a body that wasn't ideal to society. My mom could have been a model, you know? She's one of those, you know? Mm-hmm. She's beautiful, and I'm beautiful. I know that, right? But society has a definition of beauty that impacts us all. You know, it's a psyche. Right. And I know this because I've visited other societies. I've lived in Italy. I've lived in South Africa. I've lived in France. I've lived in these different places. And I've been around different people who have garnered different psyches from their upbringings based on where they come from.
Sure.
And I've had the gaze of different people from different psyches that have treated me different due to that. In America, right, this is kind of public knowledge at this point, especially if you're a person of color and yourself, you know, we have been raised in a Eurocentric, you know, viewpoint of beauty in our society. And a part of that Eurocentric beauty standard is thinness. And there's a book called Fearing the Black Body. They actually associated fatness with blackness.
Really?
Yes, like hundreds of years ago.
Interesting.
You know, the woman that they would tour around Europe that came from South Africa, Sarah Bartman.
Okay, Sarah Bartman, yeah.
And, she was toured around Europe in quote-unquote freak shows where they would showcase, in so many words, look at her huge butt, okay, look at her huge breast, look at these huge things, like fatness.
I did hear about this, actually. Yes.
And so there was an association, you know, with Europeans that, you know, this body type is bad, or, you know, whatever it may be, it's black, right? And with the negative association to blackness and to make us hate ourselves when they enslaved us here in this country, they turned everything about us into something negative.
Right. That's interesting when we think about, oh gosh, these associations between blackness and anything that is not attractive, whether it be, you know, bigger or it's always some sort of deviance, right? I mean, you see a lot of that in advertising, and it's still there. It's not that subtle. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about in the 80s, early 90s even, you'd be watching TV, and it would be like a constipation commercial, literally about like X-Lax or whatever it was. And they always used like a black couple. It was like, you know, it was, I think there was like Raymond and his wife. It was an old black couple, right? Because we want to associate doing number two with black people, because that's because apparently other people don't. And then we also had, I remember, the bus lady. She was a black female bus driver. She was always in these commercials. I'm like, what is this? We're certainly more than equitable here in this space, right? When we start making these associations between blackness and that which is negative, it still exists.
Yeah.
It still exists. So, but that I had not heard.
Yeah. So heard. When to move forward in my journey, when I was in middle school, I was actually called Oreo a lot, which means black on the outside, white on the inside. Sure. And so from the age of 9 and 10 and 11 years old, I began to have very deep identity complexes around what does it mean to be black and what does it mean to be white, and why is it that I'm one thing on the outside but I am another thing on the inside. So like I've literally been questioning these things for so long, and it shows up in my work of just like really doing what I can, thinking about dualities, you know. That's one reason why I paint on two panels for one single painting. I'm really trying to emphasize this act of bridging two into one. I literally paint the insides of the canvas where the two canvases meet.
Okay.
To literally emphasize that act of trying to bring those two together. Because my entire life, I have been told I'm one thing or the other. And I think that that's a lot of us, right? We're being put into these boxes. I didn't fit into that box of blackness that made people feel comfortable. And when I began to research it, because I researched it throughout college, and I also researched it in South Africa, I researched, you know, instead of calling them coconuts in South Africa, instead of calling people Oreos in South Africa, which is an American term, they call each other's coconuts. And the one way that they figure out whether you're a coconut or not is the same way that people do it here in the United States, which is your accent.
Okay.
If you're South African and you grew up in a township, but you went outside of that township to go to a school that was predominantly white, you would learn how to speak like them. And because everything is so segregated in South Africa, literally this neighborhood would have a completely different accent to a neighborhood 5 miles.
Okay.
5 miles away.
Yeah.
Like, so segregated to where you can literally figure out where someone's from within the city,
mm-hmm.
based on their accent. Now, of course, it's the same everywhere you go, basically, right? But it's so stark in South Africa. It's like scary almost. But I say that to say that, you know, if you were to go outside of your school and, you know, go somewhere else, you would have a different accent. And so when you go back home, people look at you and be like, you ain't really black, you know, you have. And what it is like, and what I researched and what I learned is that when you really think about what makes someone white on the inside, and you say, oh, it's the way you talk, and then you like this, and then you do that, and then you do that, you look at those things and it's just like, but there's nothing wrong with reading books.
For and sure.
There's nothing wrong with skateboarding or liking Taylor Swift or
right. This
or that. Like, I don't listen to Taylor Swift, but I had a couple times throughout high school, people were just like, Lenaya, you look like one of those girls that listen to Taylor Swift. Ha, 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 ha. Do you listen to Taylor Swift?
Right.
And I'd be like, I don't listen to Taylor Swift. And to this day, I will not listen to Taylor Swift. Because I don't want to, you know, make it true that I'm one of the black girls that listen to Taylor Swift.
Right.
No. But it really doesn't matter. But you know, it's sad when you look at it and then you think, well, what do I need to do to be more black? Right?
Mm.
And you start, okay, well, I need to change the way I speak to this way, and I need to do this and I need to do that. And it's just like, wait a second. Those things aren't necessarily the best things. Like, you're calling me white because I'm smart. And you're calling me this because I'm that. And you're calling me this because I'm... And it's just like, wait a second. We associate blackness to a whole list of negativity.
That's terrible.
And we associate whiteness with all of these positive things on a subconscious level. We don't even realize it.
Well, one example I was thinking, I may have brought this up before in the past, but we're talking about art, and this has always struck me as retarded. I remember, you know, growing up in New York and being like in the city or whatever, and you know, you pass like the artists who are doing, I don't know what you call it, but they're doing like, not sketches, but they're doing portraits of people, you know, just on the fly. And whenever they were doing people of color, the lips were big.
The caricature. Caricatures.
It's a caricature, yeah. Right? Because you have to start with the premise that our lips are big and are not normal size, because you exaggerate that which you think is already exaggerated. And then we, in turn, many in the community, you've heard it. People are like, oh, you know, we got big lips. Well, compared to who? Who said, you know, and you don't see the inverse of that. You don't see, for example, caricatures of, well, you, to a degree, but like, you see a white person, they're not making the lips smaller. We're not saying they have small lips, and therefore we're going to make them smaller and exaggerate that which we think is deviant. Right? We're the deviants, right? We have the big lips. And you hear it all the time amongst us in the community. Oh, we got big lips.
Big lips, big noses, you know.
Who's that?
But it's just like, when you start using this small, big, mm-hmm. when you start using these words, it's just like, big compared to what?
Compared to what? Right.
And it's funny because a completely different subject came to mind in terms of, like, in relation to this. You know, I just recently, you know, my page went from 4,600 followers in December 2022 to December in 2023 having over 200,000 followers.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been a beautiful, wonderful shift in my life that's been incredible to witness and experience. But beforehand, I was doing content for an entire year. It wasn't until my 60th video that I did, maybe 58th. Yeah, my 58th video that I posted that went viral, which what I consider viral at that point. Now I consider viral a completely different thing. Mm. But like, it got over 400,000 views.
Wow.
It was my 79th video that I posted, mm-hmm. that got... 1.6 million views.
Wow.
I actually don't know what number video I posted that got 7.4 million views, I think it has. But it's just like,
it's a lot.
Yeah.
I had no idea you were getting, wow.
Oh, yeah.
We're in the millions.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Do you remember what the video was? What were you doing in the video?
Yeah. Well, the first initial video, do you want to know like the most viral one?
Sure.
The most viral video, the first time I posted it, it got 7.4 million views. The one that I posted now has 4.4 million views. So in combination, that one video has gotten over 10 million views on Instagram alone. On TikTok, it got like a million views and different things as well. So I'm really grateful for that, because why I'm grateful is because it's helping people.
But what were you saying in the video?
You know, I said, has there been growth? You know, I didn't ask you how much growth. I asked, has there been growth? Yes or no question I need to answer. And if the answer is yes, I'm going to need you to chill. Chill out. Chill all that crying, that overthinking, chill all that stuff out. And I'm going to need you to clap some hands and celebrate yourself. Because if there's been growth, guess what that means? There's going to be growth. Because I don't know about you, but we out here, we stay determined. We stay determined in these parts.
Why do you think that video, and you've had others, but why do you think that resonated so much because with so many people?
We're so hard on ourselves, and we see so many other people posting their wins all the time, and we're comparing ourselves, and we're thinking about our growth, and we're wondering, we're looking at where we are now, and we're not satisfied, and we think that we should be somewhere else. But in reality, you're where you're supposed to be, one, and two, if we're really thinking about it, if you've grown, like you have grown, and there is something to celebrate. And I think there's a lack of permission that we're giving ourselves to celebrate where we are, because we're always focused on where we want to go.
Win in the next, yeah. I saw one of your videos where I assume it's not the same one, but you talk about the pace of growth, and how, growth is growth. And if you've grown slowly, you've still moved in the right direction.
Yeah.
So that's even fascinating, that in and of itself, particularly in this environment.
Slow growth is still growth. There we go. I was going through my, I was like, which one's which one?
Right. So, but it's the messaging, it's not just a message. Obviously, the message resonates, but it's the messenger too, right? You give yourself credit for being the one to deliver these messages, because there are other people who could say the same thing and may not get that kind of response. Mm. So what is it about your, assuming it's delivery, what is that people respond to? What is that?
Well, you know.
Now's the time to pat yourself on the back.
I've never been in a room that didn't have me in it. So I don't know exactly what makes me different per se, other than I know my audience. And my audience is, if it's in an auditorium, there's only one seat being filled. And it's Lanai Roberts in 2019 that couldn't get out of bed. And I mean, I was so depressed, and I was so mean to myself, and I was so hard to myself. I had no hope for my future. I thought that all of my mistakes up to that point that was it for me. I had hurt people, you know, I made mistakes, and I felt like I wasn't capable of being an artist because I didn't feel like I could work hard enough to have a career in the arts. I viewed myself as lazy, as stupid, unintelligent. I viewed myself as undeserving. I did not feel like I deserved for, and I'm smiling right now because this is the video that introduced us. I did not feel like I deserved my gifts and my talents to come easy to me because it felt easy.
Why do you think you experienced that then? Because that is the year you, I think, you graduated college or, yeah. Why would you be at a time where you would be theoretically seeing yourself as, you know, phenomenal and you're ready to take on the world? Why do you think that period was so low for you?
I had been in multiple abusive friendships at that point in my life. And I laughed and I giggled a little bit right now because I thought of the moment that I met that one abusive friend that changed my life in the worst ways possible. I was on top of the world at that point. College correspondent with the Huffington Post. Famous on my campus for this Snapchat series called Weather by Lanaya that I was
doing. And where did you go to school, Lanaya?
Syracuse University. Where did you go to school, sir?
Syracuse University. I tell you, there's just greatness all over this podcast, right?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I remember the time that they entered into my life and I was on top of the world to the point where one of the first few conversations that we had, vulnerable conversations that we had with one another, they actually told me, you know, Lanaya, I'm going to be very honest with you right now. I'm jealous of you.
Whoa.
And I understood her because if I wasn't me, I'd be jealous of me too. Listen, to this day, I'm very blessed. I'm a very blessed person. Thank you, Jesus. But someone who doesn't recognize their own light will look at mine and see a threat rather than inspiration.
Absolutely.
And so instead of saying, I'm inspired by you, how did you do what you're doing? She said, I'm jealous of you. And I will never forget that because that was very prevalent for the next, how many years? Like 4 or 5 years of our
prevalent
friendship.
From that. Oh yeah. That person. Mm-hmm. Was that, do you think that, is that more scary than her not saying it and you knowing it?
I think what's scary is the fact that I knew it and I stayed.
There's that. Yeah.
You know?
It's fascinating. When we think about friendships, when we think about abuse, we always think about relationships, romantic relationships. We generally don't think about friendships as being abusive.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Because I've never been in I have been in a couple cute relationships.
Sure, sure.
My boyfriend when I was in France for a couple months, da-da-da-da. Or you know, this person I met in Italy that I talked to for
Okay.
You know, I've had a couple cute ones, but they've never been like actual, real, full blown relationships. And I believe that that's because protection over my life, because I know the friends that I've attracted to my life. I can only imagine if I was in a relationship with someone who was abusive and how much that would have, as sensitive as I am, how much that would have tore me in two pieces because of the way that these friends, I mean, that was more than enough to make me feel like I was just the worthy
the
of
problem
nothing.
Or what, yeah, yeah,
and
I see
and
that.
Also okay. The problem, the worst person in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a history of experiencing narcissistic abuse throughout my life. And my friendships that I feel was something that was prevalent. I'm not diagnosing nobody. I don't know who was narcissist or whatever. But I do know that there were some symptoms, you know, that were being at play in my relationships. I'm not perfect, you know. Hurt people hurt people. I've been hurt in the past. I've hurt others. Mm-hmm. Others have hurt me. But the way that nothing was ever their fault.
Yeah.
The way that I would so easily and quickly take the blame. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. You know what? You're right. Mm-hmm. It got me so far off my game. These people, because it was multiple people, mm-hmm. really, it was really hard to feel proud of myself around them. It was really hard to feel non-critical of myself around them because I was always being criticized and I was always being, you know, shrunk. I mean, I remember having a conversation with this person on the night of my grandfather's funeral, which happened at the end of 2018, December 2018, when I came back home from South Africa. And when I went to South Africa, I experienced a really, really rough time, not because of the country, but because of the continuous state I was in of always displeasing and just being in complete, just being in really terrible friendships for years on end.
Wow.
And it came to a height when I went to the motherland. No, I'm just kidding. No, but when it came to a height, when I went into the space and I started to now, because when you go to a new place, it's just like, oh, let me challenge myself to do something different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so therefore I challenged myself to really be the fullness of me and also not only the sweet version of Lanaya, but from a very young age, being a plus size, big, tall girl, I realized that people would easily become afraid of me at any spark of emotion. I don't know if you've experienced this as a black man, but I noticed that little Margaret over there, that one moment at 3 years old, right? 3 years old. I started school, going on 4, which is still a baby. 3-4 years old, I noticed if I like laughed really hard or made too sudden of a movement or something like that, little Margaret over there would jump a little bit. That's for fascinating. A second. I noticed that and I realized, whoa, no, I'm not mean. I want you to be my friend. You know, I'm nice, you know. From a very young age, I realized that I had to police my emotions or else other people would. And if I didn't act in alignment with emotions that made people feel comfortable around me, then I would just have people have the wrong image of me, which is I'm a mean, angry black woman. You know, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the black woman thing. It was also, I'm a mean, angry, scary, big black woman.
Right.
And so I learned from a young age to shelter those emotions and therefore only exhibit emotions that people would find comfortable.
Palatable. Yeah. Yeah. You asked me, I mean, you know, I didn't experience a lot of that, but this is why I think, I was always not a loner. I mean, I'm very social, whatever, but I enjoy being alone and I like being with self. So I did a lot of things alone or with a friend, maybe two others. But usually if I'm dealing with groups, it's usually family. So what I noticed when I went out with a friend, but especially if it's a black male friend, it's almost like my chances of being seen and not in a positive way increased tenfold. So I remember specifically, I was probably 13, 14. I was in New York and with a friend, and he was going back to the Bronx. I grew up in Brooklyn. Took him to, he was like, you know, come meet to the train station. So I went to the train station just to kind of see him off. We get to the train station, and there's a police officer there, and he comes up to us, because two of us, and he was like, I know you guys are about to jump the turnstile, meaning you're going to not pay. was like, have we, you, what evidence have you seen? First of all, I'm not going anywhere. He is. But it was this presumption of criminality. So what, and this is what happens with all black boys and men. It's the minute we're out there as a group. I see it today as an adult. If I'm with like two of my friends, we're grown and, you know, professional, but now people are uncomfortable. I have a friend who says people want to know that they can feel safe around you, right? That you're attached to something that makes them comfortable. So if you're a black man with a black woman and two kids, okay. You know, if you're a black man coming out of, I don't know, Macy's with like six bags, you know, and your hands are not free to commit a crime, you're okay. You know, you need those qualifiers, but just being a black man walking around untethered and uncontrolled is definitely an issue for everyone. Anyone who would say otherwise, I'd be shocked. Mm-hmm. And you're the one time where I think as an individual I had an issue was actually at Syracuse. I was I grew up in New York City, so I at least in the beginning, I would take the Greyhound from New York City to campus. And at the time, the Greyhound station, you could walk from the Greyhound station to campus because it was closer. It was like on Genesee Street or something like that. I remember getting off the bus. It was winter. It's always winter. Syracuse, walking up to campus and just, you know, minding my business. I'm back to be, it's after winter break. And this, I guess he was a police officer in plain clothing, comes up to me. He was like, hey, listen, I know you just got off that bus that came from New York. Do you mind if we just kind of check, you know, your belongings? Because there's a lot of drugs coming from the city. And of course, you know, I'm like 17, 18. I'm like, I knew I felt uncomfortable. But I was like, well, sure, I don't have anything on me. And that was the first time that that kind of thing had happened to me. And I remember I was working in radio at the time. I was doing an internship at WSYR, Syracuse. And I told the host, was a black man, George Kilpatrick, who's still on the radio in Syracuse, and he was livid, and he talked about it on the air. And that was one of the first times I realized both, wow, I knew racism had existed, but to experience it in such a concrete way, but then also to experience the power of using media to inform and instruct. It was like, okay, if I'm going to experience this, well, I'm going to talk about it and let people know that that was wrong. So that was a very long-winded, but absolutely yes, necessary. It has definitely happened to me, you know.
I remember I said that because when I went to South Africa, and this is all going back from the question where you're just like, why were you at that point in 2019?
Yes.
When I went to South Africa, before I went to South Africa, I was just like, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore. If I feel angry, I'm going to be angry. If someone looks at me and says something I don't like, I'm not going to protect them from me. I'm going to let them know that that wasn't okay. You know, I was someone that was bullied a lot in middle school and bullied a lot in high school and things like that. And so I was just, once again, a sponge.
What do you mean by bullying? I mean, like, how do you define that?
Verbally bullied. Okay. Like, I mean, people would laugh at me, laugh at me a lot, you know, use me as their, you know,
like punching bag,
you know, but not. It never was physical, but yeah, a lot of mental, emotional play, I guess you could say, in terms of those kids. Yeah, it was very, very saddening. I said to say that I wouldn't take up for myself because I didn't know how. I never wanted to hurt someone the way they were hurting me, you know? I never wanted to make someone feel the way that they were making me feel.
Sure.
And I also just didn't know how to stand up to those mean people, you know? Like, I just didn't have the guts, you know? It was just, I was too soft. And I say too soft in a very, like, grateful way because I'd rather be too soft than to be too hard. Like, those people, I don't know where they are today.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where they are today.
So you were, that's interesting. I think that's the difference, or one of, you know, probably several differences. I think in my, like, I was never bullied or anything like that. But looking back, I think there were always haters. We kind of talked about this off air. And so I just wasn't aware. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware and I wasn't tuned in to that. But what happens with that, though, is even if you're not aware, the energy is still there.
Yeah.
So you may not know why you feel a certain way after being around certain people. And that's, you know, because it's not always, you know, I don't call it abuse necessarily, but mismanagement of the moment isn't always clear.
Yeah.
You know, and people aren't, again, they can be talking about you, you know, in the next room, but you will feel that energy mm-hmm. and you don't know why mm-hmm. things are off. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I didn't have a lot of haters. I had a lot of bullies.
You think so? So you, even looking back, I mean, you don't think there was any sense of, gosh, she definitely knows where she's going. There's a light that shines inside of her, and I'm just going to hate. I'm going to hate.
Once again, remember when I was just like, oh, like I haven't had a life that a lot of people wanted, per se, until recently. There wasn't that much to hate on. Like when I was in middle school, I was kind of a normal middle school person, other than I was a talented artist. You know, when I was in high school, I was very, very shy, very in a shell, very to myself because I was very afraid of being bullied. So I would close myself off and not express myself around other people. And, so there wasn't that much light to be jealous of or to look like and be like, oh, she got it going on, you know, or whatever.
At least it wasn't visible.
Until I started to post on Instagram and I started gaining followers.
That's fascinating.
When I started gaining followers, I'll never forget, I had a popular drawing Instagram account when I was young. And I gained over 37,000 followers. But eventually, my account got hacked or something. Hacked by Jesus, I say. Because,
hacked by Jesus.
Yes, because I literally told God, I like received some hate comments on my Instagram once. Yeah. And I told God, I don't want this anymore. This isn't worth it. And literally the next day I got up and I couldn't sign in. Like, literally.
I want to take a quick break, just, you know, and pick up on that, because that is really a pivotal moment or period in your life.
Yeah. This,
it's almost like going from the private Lanai to the public Lanai. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about how that's changed you.
Yeah.
So we'll pick up with that when we come back.
Hey, where you been? The Surge Experience is bringing you interviews with thoughtful people on some interesting topics. We go deep and sometimes not so deep. Check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and other platforms. We're also on DC Radio 96.3 HD. Visit us at thesurgeexperience.com.
You know, I didn't have friends in high school, and I was actually very much so against the idea of getting an Instagram account because it was brand new. It was a brand new thing. It was a new thing that people were starting to do. It was 2012, you know, and I was just like, no, like, I'm not about to get an Instagram account and have no followers. Like, why would I do that for myself? Because I didn't have any friends. Why would I? Like, I could think about, like, maybe two or three people that would follow me. I did not have any friends. Like I said, I had shut myself down when I went to high school, right? I literally was so afraid of being bullied that I, before high school, assessed my own personality and questioned what exactly made people want to bully me. And I realized that people would bully me when I would try to be funny. People would bully me when I would talk and just bring attention to myself, period. People would bully me because, you know, of the way I look, the way I dress. You know, people would look, you know, bully me because of my hair, because of the shoes I wore, you know, every single thing about me. And I was just like, okay, People don't like it when I try to be funny, when I'm weird. People call me weird. I'm going to put that in a box. Mm-hmm. And the part of me that wants to try to get to know people and be sweet and kind, I'm going to put that in a box. And the part of me that, you know, tries to be happy, spread joy, I'm going to put that in a box. I'm not about to get bullied in this new space, right? I was going to an all-black high school, historically right. black high school.
Right.
The people that bullied me wasn't the white people in class. It was the black kids, right? The black kids would bully me, call me an Oreo, all these different kind of things, right? And so, you know, it was just like I was afraid of black people because of that, you know? I wasn't afraid of white people. White people love me and my personality, you know what I mean? Black people wasn't like that. And so, you know, it was just like I had to throw myself away in the sake of not being bullied anymore. And what happened was I went into high school and I was inside of a shell within myself. It was one of the hardest times of my life, you know, because I knew I was this girl who was just sunshines and rainbows and fireworks and everything, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, I was black and white on the outside. Like, no one could see that because I covered myself up to protect myself.
Wow. And I don't know much about IG prior to 2020. So back then, because you were concerned about like who would follow you, was it the kind of thing where you would only be followed by the people you knew?
There wasn't so like a way for people to discover you other than like hashtags and things like that. Oh,
okay.
But yeah, like I was like I didn't have like I was not the Lanaya you know today, and that's why it's like so important for me to. I wish there were more cameras back in that time, you know what I mean? So that there could be some like actual proof of how far I've really come and how hard it was for me too to get to a point in a position where I could step outside of myself and really be me, which is a real courageous act when you were traumatized for being you, you know, when you were bullied for being you. And so I say that to say that I got on Instagram. I ended up saying, you know what? Maybe I should get on Instagram. What's my name going to be? Okay. It's Lanaya with two S's. Okay. I was just like, well, I'm going to make sure I'm not unpopular. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that I am not unpopular in not real life. You know what I mean? I'm unpopular in real life. I'm going to do everything in my power to not be unpopular on like social media. And so I got on social media and I just looked up on Google. How do you get followers?
Wow.
Or I don't even know if it was on Google, but I ended up, or yeah, it was just like post really good fit photos. And so I posted literally 100 photos in under like a day or two, like 2 days. I had like 100 photos post. I would just post it. It's so funny. I didn't know anything I was doing. And I would put all these hashtags. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm just exploring Instagram. And I see on the For You page, the popular page is what it used to be called, I see these amazing artists, like amazing artists, right? And at that point, I had not practiced art in 2 years because I didn't have an art class, an accessible art class in my high school. And so I, you know, looked at that and was just like inspired. And for some reason, even though I was very, very unconfident in my personal life, I looked at those artists and I was just like, I can do that. I mean, they were good, like professional, like amazing, like amazing. And I looked at them and I was just like, I can do that. And so I got out my sketchbook again and I started drawing, and I'll never forget. I was so afraid to post my first drawing. And I'll never forget, I posted it with a few hashtags and it got 17 likes. And I said, oh my God, somebody likes my art. And it was just this moment of like, I gotta make another. And And it was just like this obsession that began where it was just like, I became so impressed with the fact that someone from somewhere else could like what I created, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I say that to say that later on, I ended up finding, like, I ended up seeing in these comments on popular posts on the popular page, mm-hmm. L for L, F for F, S for S, which means like for like, follow for follow, shout out for shout out. Mm. So I was just like, huh. I was just like, why do people keep commenting this? Like, it just doesn't make sense. And I was just like, you know what? Let me try it. Like for like, follow for follow. So I posted on one of the popular pictures, like for like, follow for follow, and on it, like three of them, right? The pictures getting, you know, going viral, getting 20,000 likes or, you know, whatever. I started getting likes galore, like so many likes, hundreds of likes, all these different people. And I was just like, this is it. This is it. Like all of a sudden I had 100 followers. And then the next day I did it again and I had 150 or 200 or 300.
Wow. Yeah.
Eventually I got to a place where I think I had... I don't know if it was 1,000 or 5,000. Or no. I had 1,000 followers. And at that point, I really started posting my pictures of my art. I was really practicing. I was getting so good so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did my first shout out for shout out with an artist who had 5,000 followers. And I got a lot of followers from her. And that started my role. I was just like, wait a second, shout out for shout outs gets way more. I could just, you know, message these people. Instagram didn't have messages at that point. So I had to message them on Kick, which was like this app that you could freely message. It was kind of like WhatsApp in a way. But I would just use their Kick. Usually you'd have your Kick in your bio. I would just message them on Kick and become friends. And then it'd be like, hey, you want to do a shout out for shout out? Like, let's do this. And so eventually through the form of shout out for shout outs, like for like, I stopped doing the like for like, follow for follow because I started having genuine followers. Because what I realized was that people would follow me and then they would unfollow once they realized I never followed them. Follow them back because it would just so much would come in at once. It would be kind of impossible for me.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it would be impossible for me to keep up with everyone, every follow. And then eventually I was just like, you know what? I ain't even gotta actually like
right.
follow for follow. I'm just getting these likes, you know? And so anyways, rolls eyes. I say to say that once I got to a point with my follow for shout out for shout out,
mm-hmm.
And I remember I had so many close friends from that period in my life where it was like people, we all, like we were a group, like these young artist people were like ganging up together and shouting each other out and gaining all these followers. It was just such a success, like line of success. And then, I ended up gaining, I think I had about 20, maybe it was like 15 to 17,000 followers. Mm. And I was getting a couple thousand likes on my photos from the following that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when my first post started to get on the popular page myself. Right.
Mm.
So I went from commenting on the popular page of mm-hmm. other people's posts mm-hmm. to actually getting on the popular page. Mm-hmm. And that's when it would get like, you know, something would go viral, you know, in terms of like, I mean, when I say viral, I mean like, you know, 10,000 likes, you know, which is huge, you know, a huge deal. But and I would get a few thousand followers, you know, and that's when things really started to grow.
Mm.
And then, but the thing is, though, when I would have like get you know many followers, my views would go to people that really didn't like my art. So every viral thing that happened, it wasn't no longer the safety net of my own followers that loved me. I was now getting into the viewpoint of people that really didn't love me.
Mm.
And so I would start to get my first hater comments, you know, and I just couldn't take it, you know. I was just so you know, my skin was so soft from middle school and I was so sensitive from, you know, being bullied and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was just too much for me. And then that's when I ended up praying one night, and I was just like, you know, after I got these, you know, oh, my four-year-old can do this. The coolest thing about this was the signature. Like all these like weird comments from these grown people. Mm-hmm. And I remember just looking up to God, and I was just like, God, I don't want this anymore. This sucks. I don't like this. And literally I took a nap and I woke up. And after I woke up, I clicked the Instagram app and I was logged out. God shut, like, I was hacked by Jesus. Wow. I was hacked by Jesus. And no one really believed me that I was hacked, because all of my posts were the same. Nobody had started posting weird, like, Bitcoin, you know, like, pictures or anything like that. Like, none of that. No one was getting weird messages from me, you know. I wasn't actually hacked, you know. I just couldn't log back in. And I had just changed my password 2 weeks prior. So I knew exactly what my password was, you know, everything. And then my email that I had the password set to, that was hacked as well. So something had happened. I had a Yahoo email, like something had happened where it was just like it went downhill and I couldn't log into my email anymore. So it was like I'm trying to save my account. My email's not working either. I was like, SOL. And that's when I made a new account. And at first it was called at It's Lanai with the underscore.
Right.
And I had about 6,000 people follow me on there, come over, follow me. And yeah, just over the years, that kind of stayed the same. I was really heartbroken about Instagram. I mean, that broke my heart. I worked so hard to build that following and then to lose it all just in a day. Yeah. And then, you know, to have to start all over. I was just like, oh, I'm done. But at that point also, my relationship to art was changing. And, you know, I really, when I look back, you know, I think I probably would have become an illustrator if I had stayed on Instagram, because I would have stayed in that world of like commercialism and commercial art. I was already like making prints of my work and things like that at that point to sell to people. And I think if I would have had that success, it would have just kept getting bigger and bigger. And you go on my page now, you can go today and still look at, you can see my entire art journey, like literally where I began a decade ago. It's incredible. But you look at the work, and I was drawing eyes and pretty eyes and these pretty girls that I would draw from my imagination that weren't black. Because when I would look up beautiful woman to paint or draw on Google, beautiful woman, what would pop up? White women, you know, like I would draw those women, and I didn't have, you know, I had a negative association when it came to beauty with myself, you know? And so, but that's where the self-portraits and things like that started coming in, where I really began to experience a radical shift in my work. And yeah, it was just, yeah. Am I talking too much?
No, okay, no. Okay. not at all. So, but you went from that, you shut down your, or it was hacked by Jesus.
It was the hacked initial, by Jesus.
The initial Instagram account. And then after that was high school, and then of course you had your experience at college, but that wasn't Instagram related. That was related to
that was related to Snapchat.
Just completely different. Yeah. Oh, Snapchat.
Yeah,
okay.
Completely different platform.
Okay.
I was not engaged on Instagram at all. Okay. I had not even posted on Instagram hardly, and I went to Syracuse, and I was just a social butterfly. You know, I literally made a goal there to really be myself, you know, and people ask all the time, like, or they don't ask all the time, but I get sometimes, how do you make friends? You know, like how do you make friends? I have a lot of friends. I'm grateful for that. Because at one point, I remember looking at my phone in high school when I didn't have any friends. And I would go 2 weeks. 2 weeks without getting a text message.
Wow.
I would get a text message. Excuse me. I would get a text message from my mom, you know. But that was about it. You know, I had like maybe two friends that would text me.
Wow.
And it was just like, I had no friends. And I remember thinking, like, wow, I really wish I had friends. And now when I look at my text message, I mean, I remember counting once in college. I, you know, texted like 60 people, 70 mm-hmm. people in 1 week, you know.
Why? Is it because they had your number somehow?
I mean, so many people. Like, I just knew so many people.
And right.
I don't know. I don't know how I talked to that many people a week. I don't know how it's possible.
Right.
I'm a Libra.
Right.
We're all about relationships, I guess. I don't know. But it's still to this day, if I was to count out, I'm just like, I'm overwhelmed by the amount of people I'm connected to.
Stay tuned for Lanaya Roberts Part 2.